welcome to another episode of Inside the Recording Studio. I am Jody Whitesides, and with me as always is Mr. Chris Hellstrom. How are you today, Chris?
Doing very well, Jody. I'm doing very well. Was that some actual manual time stretching going on there?
Something of that effect, sure.
Hinting at the topic of the show. I wanted to ask you, it was an interesting talk we had with Andrew last week.
Very much so.
Right. There's a lot to digest there, so...
Go back and listen to it more than once.
Yeah, you might learn a few things, right? But yeah. Today we're going off the beaten path a little bit. We're talking about what?
Ways to add interest to your audio tracks and how to get more mileage out of any samples you might be using.
Yeah. A lot of times people go sample hunting. They want the newest sample pack or whatever it is.
Well, why not? If you're first to it, then everybody else thinks people are following you.
This is true, but that would mean that you have to be first. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's always been times of when you hear a new sample instrument or virtual instrument come out, loop libraries back in the day, and you start hearing it everywhere. Like for Stylus RMX, you used to hear stuff all the time. So, oh, there's that loop. Or there's that loop. So this is a ways that we can get a little bit more creative if we have a little downtime or we just feel creative. And if you're doing some of these things that we're going to talk about, you will sound unique because there's very little chance that somebody's thought and done and processed their audio exactly the way that you're going to do it.
One would hope. But that doesn't necessarily ring true 100% of the time.
Of course not. It's fun. And I have to say, I mentioned this before. There was one of these producer challenges by Andrew Wong. And one of the guys that participated in that did something that I thought was really, really interesting. It was a guy who goes by AU5. Mm-hmm. They were given a sample and they had to create a song with it. Okay. And the sample that they got was like an open door creaking. And the way he processed that was really, really fascinating. So why would we want to do this then, rather than just have some fun? What do you think?
The first thing that pops in my mind is to have a means to creating interest on boring audio.
Sure. To me, it's like if you have your song and we have all these ideas of parts that we want to put in there, but everything is not working. So when we have these parts that in the track by themselves can be sort of pedestrian or boring, using some of these techniques can add a little bit more life and interest to them. Something that adds to your track as opposed to just like, meh, as you like to say.
Meh.
So what's first on the agenda, Jody?
Extreme time and pitch stretching, which has been around for quite a while.
Sure.
The first plugin I can think of that did this type of thing was the Serato plugin. Do you remember that?
Yeah, time and pitch, right?
Yeah.
It was the algorithm that you bought to fit into the time and pitch machine in Logic. It mm-hmm. was a standalone plugin, I think, as well.
It was, yes. But you had to purchase it extra in Logic way back in the day if you wanted to do certain things.
Yeah. It was a better algorithm than... what was available in Logic at the time.
Yes.
I'm not sure if that's available actually anymore.
They still make it.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's not internal to Logic in that regard the way it was back in the day. And what's the deal behind doing it and using something like this?
To create textures out of stuff, mm-hmm. right? So if you have whatever it is, let's say it's a vocal sample or something, stretching it by like extreme amounts, and I'm not talking about making... something just fit the tempo,
right?
But stretching it in the multitude of 100%, right? So you can really, really drag it out. And it creates a lot of cool textures. I think that almost makes it like droning kind of a sound.
Sure.
Great to either leave alone or print again and toss them into your sampler and tweak further perhaps. Mm-hmm. But it's a really, really cool way. Is this something that you do? You mentioned pitch and time there. Do you use any like third-party stuff for this, or is it just like you stick to Logic because that's still your creation DAW, right?
It's still the creation and editing DAW, yes. Generally speaking, if I'm going to go nuts with something, I'm going to do the time stretch or time compress of a region using Logic. It's just when Logic just, built
like, option
in.
Dragging it.
Yeah,
type of
option
thing?
Dragging the region in Logic will allow you to change the time in a very different way than trying to just change it via a tempo thing. Way back when, before Ableton Live was capable of doing some crazy time signatures, I used to do some time stretching and other weird effects using Ableton because it's very, very good at it. And keeping things artifact free is a good way of saying it.
Yeah, that was the strength of Ableton early on, besides other things that it did well, that it had, for some reason, the way that they used an algorithm there that did it relatively seamlessly without artifacts, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, sometimes those artifacts can be a cool thing as well if you're doing this kind of extreme stuff and it kind of, but if you want it to just be nice and smooth and not destroyed to hell, you know?
Yes.
That was a good way of doing it.
Well, and the fun thing is that eventually after a little pestering from a couple of people that I know, Ableton actually added the ability to do things in very, very odd time signatures.
Yeah, because it was just 4-4 in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, strictly 4-4.
Right.
Crazy.
Other things that I have done is I used a reactor patch. I can't remember what ensemble it was, but it was one of the user-submitted ones to granularize audio as well. And because obviously with that whole world opening up, you could really, really mangle sounds as well and come up with interesting things. If you're not using Reactor and you're a Logic user, you can actually import samples into Alchemy.
Okay.
Because it does a granular mode. And that's also a really good way of tweaking sounds and stretching things and coming up with interesting results.
Sure. What's the next one you got here on our list?
Rhythmic effects.
Yes.
I got, and this is something from simple gating things to like tremolo effects or maybe even those like classic like stutter edits that were possibly done a little too much in the early 2000s, at least by me maybe because I was really, really into them. Using all these techniques can work the same way for all three, right? You can use musical division to add a groove or in the case of perhaps like stutter effects, having a little bit more of a glitchy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that can sound really, really cool. Not to blow my own trumpet here too hard, but I did a track on an album that I did. I just realized it was almost 10 years ago. Holy crap, time flies. But there's a track called Love, which is just sound mangling. And it's like a showcase for all of these techniques. But that sounds a little bit too self-aggrandizing. I used a lot of these things in there, and granular synthesis and the gating and stutter edits and all this kind of stuff are well on display there.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I think could sound really, really cool, whether you're doing it in just risers or slowdowners or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Look at any Heaviosity product and you see and they always have like a gating engine in there or something or a tremolo engine. It sounds really, really cool to me anyway.
Well, the same could be said for Isotope's stutter edit. And Stutter Edit 2, which was designed by the guy that really kind of put stutter editing on the map, BT.
Absolutely. And that's a deep plugin as well. I mean, even the first one, version 1, was really, really deep. And I think designed for DJs really to use in real time, as it were. And that's just kind of a crazy concept. Still super powerful. I think it can perhaps leave users a little bit intimidated because of the interface. There's a lot to take in there, but once
version
you
2 definitely has that.
Right.
There's no doubt.
But it is really, really powerful, and just having it all in one as opposed to multitude of processing with different plugins. That's a cool one. There are other things that are on the cheaper side as well. And I think actually it might even be free, but there's a company called Audio Modern.
Mm.
They have a plugin called GateLab, which just does gating, right? And you can randomize and do all sorts of kind of creative stuff with it. So that's one of them that's kind of cool to use as well.
Right.
Me, of course, being a glutton for punishment, I tended to do all of these by hand. So I like to cut in the DAW. Either way works. Obviously, if you are cutting it by yourself and you're cutting by hand, don't forget to crossfade or fade your regions or you're going to end up with a lot of nasty artifacts.
Possibly. And remember, those can sometimes be cool. When it comes to things like tremolo, though.
Yeah.
In Logic, there's a great tremolo plugin mm-hmm. built in.
Yeah.
In Luna, not so much. But there is a free tremolo plugin out there called Pechenig. At least I believe that's how it is. It might be Pechenig tremolo. It's a free plugin. It's older. And then my favorite gate plugin, just for gating in general, is Gatey Waity by Boz Labs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And right. The reason why is it has three different ways it can do gating, and it's pretty hip.
That is a cool one as well. When you're doing all of these, let's say that you're setting up Gatey Waity, do you tend to go for like a synced tempo thing, or do you go more for a random? I suppose it depends on what it is that you're trying to do.
Well, Gatey Waity isn't something that you'd necessarily use for rhythmic effect. It's used more for filtering. And you can filter from a low pass filter to a high pass filter or just the entire range all the way. And then it has the typical look ahead. It has the attack and release, those type of things. Now, of course, it can sidechain, which mm-hmm. then you could tie to something being done rhythmically using a MIDI note situation to trigger a sound that would open and close the gate if you wanted to do it that way. That would be the same way I would do it in Logic as well, using MIDI notes to open and close a gate if I'm going to try and do it rhythmically speaking, and then set everything super extreme.
So it's almost like that we were talking about Steve Wimmett with the guitars for Zombies from Hell and all that kind of stuff. Is that the kind of gating that you're talking about or no?
Well, they did gating along with delay sounds or delay timing that created this really amazing rhythmic value to the song that would be impossible to play as a human. Even for Steve, exactly. If you were trying to play it without using a gate and delay. Those are things that you can pull off and make things sound way more complicated than they actually are if you're using things like gates and delays very effectively.
You know, just using a tremolo or gating can possibly seem like low-hanging fruit.
Very much so, yeah.
Processing your files or you're trying to do something creative. But I think it really just comes down to how much we're thinking about it and not to be afraid of sort of randomness of it. Sometimes that can be the most interesting thing, I think. It's very easy to think, oh, we're doing an eighth note or a 16th note thing that's going to get faster or whatever. But if we have those in odd places, it just adds interest to a part that might not be a standout part, but it certainly brings more life to it. And I'm thinking of things like Radiohead had a bunch of this kind of stuff on late 90s output kind of stuff. And can be used to great effect. Don't be afraid of gating, right? But what's next on our list, Jody? What we got?
Extreme EQs and or high and low pass filtering.
Mm.
Which means you can take a sound and filter out everything or a sliver or a wider range than that. And doing that can change the value of whatever part it is or sound that it is in ways that help it fit into the arrangement better and or make it sound very unique away from what its original value was.
Yeah, this is something that I used to do a lot and more when I was working with loops or performance-based virtual instruments. Let's say something like Damage, right? With some of those performance loops that they have where there might be elements of the sound that are sounding really cool, but using the whole thing is just too much, right? Yes. So extreme filtering to just kind of create something new. You might just leave, oh, we just got something at 700 or whatever it is, right? Using just the top end is a great foundation for perhaps tweaking that sound even further.
Mm-hmm.
So using extreme EQ there. And of course, the opposite is true. And I think we have to mention here as well, like the telephone voice thing, right? Because that's essentially what that is. It's
for those that are really young, the telephone effect made it sound like a bit like a megaphone, if you're familiar with what a megaphone sounds like. Because before the advent of the cellular phone, where things kind of sound like everybody's normal voice, we had landlines and those things. When you spoke into them, they sounded a lot thinner and smaller in terms of what the person's actual voice would come out sounding like on the other end of the line. The idea of doing the phone effect is to use a low pass filter and a high pass filter and narrowing out a band somewhere in the mids and pumping them up a bit so that you're getting a very narrow range and accenting a certain portion of that narrow range that's left. And that gets you what we call the phone effect.
Yeah, I suppose people today might not know what we're actually talking about, but just like you described,
yes,
that's what was happening, right? But of course, as we're thinking of that on a vocal line or something, can be used very effectively and was and has been to death. The technique still applies to whatever it is that you're doing.
Right.
Right. So it's a similar result and you can get some cool stuff coming out of it. I remember reading an old article from, I think it was Charlie Clauser and the whole Nine Inch Nails camp keyboard magazine when they were doing or working on The Fragile and how they would go through this and just they would sit in the rooms and try to come up with material and things and then deciding that in the track, the whole thing is just too much. So they would just filter down everything. That it's just, now it's just within an inch of its life, shall we say, but the loop now works and it's interesting. So it is something that I've done a lot and I'm sure you have as well. So
I'm still doing it now with some of the remixes I'm doing.
See, there you go. Yeah. When we're talking about what we do, like audio engineering and mixing, so much of the time we're talking about things being pristine and sounding beautiful and it's in all its glory, right? Everything is supposed to be perfect. But sometimes that can be boring and it calls for something different. So using like extreme EQs or filtering, it can bring stuff to life and have a little bit more interest, I feel anyway.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree.
So the next thing on our list here is kind of related to that, I suppose. It's the use of IRs that are not necessarily units or boxes, but of unusual places or spaces.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that this immediately brings to mind for me is a plugin called Speakerphone by AudioEase that I think you had at one point.
I do own a version of it. It's quite old because I haven't used it in about 8 years plus. It's been a while since I've used it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I had that, and it was amazing. And it probably still is with the current version that they have. And the idea behind it is they went and made IRs of an insane number of just crazy different spaces. It was not originally intended for music. It was originally Foley artists and post-production sound for TV, film, video productions, what have you. They have IRs of things like the inside of a cargo van or a bathroom or a stairwell or going through some type of electronic thing like a boombox or transistor radio. They had sounds for various types of cars, like a Volkswagen Bug. They just went and made IRs of all kinds of crazy spaces. For some silly reason, I got that plugin thinking it would be fun to do that for musical purposes, to put a sound in a very strange spot, so to speak.
And even if you don't have that, there's so many IRs out there. To me, Space Designer is a real treasure trove of this.
Oh, yeah.
Because it has that category like warped spaces and fantastic for this stuff. Now, I'm not thinking necessarily of placing something in an actual environment here. It's just tweaking the audio, having it 100% wet and using whatever IR to just make it sound drastically different and hopefully cool. Transistor radio you mentioned there, that's something that's in there. That's kind of like a common thing, or having it come out of a little tiny speaker is a great way to shrink something really big.
Well, and the other thing,
have it a different vibe.
Sticking with that kind of concept of transistor radio, and you said making a big thing sound small, that's very much akin to the phone effect that we mentioned in the last process. Anytime you take something that's much wider range of dynamic and pitch value tone and put it through something like a transistor radio or telephone, you're removing a whole lot of its value on the high and low end. And it definitely puts it into a different category of how well it will sit inside a mix. Doing that using either speakerphone or using a bunch of filters to filter things down, that sound will now actually stick out a lot more than you might expect. So you have to be careful how loud you make that within your mix. Because yes. when you're removing all of that information, you start pumping up the volume a little bit to accommodate for that, it will really poke out because it's right in human hearing.
Yeah, depending on the frequency, obviously. But yes, it can poke out. And it's one temptation when you're kind of placing these in the mix, I suppose, after the fact, is that we've spent so much time tweaking these samples or the audio that we're just like, oh, I want to hear it. I want to hear it. I want to hear it louder, louder, louder. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden your main track of the song is coming out of a transistor radio. Right? So for nuggets of audio interest, it's a great technique. But IRs are a treasure trove for that.
My favorite actually of that type of effect has to be the intro to an ELO song called Telephone Line. Where
how apropos.
Right? It starts out sounding really small and narrow in the stereo mix and right in your face. And it sounds like this guy's singing to whoever it is that he's singing to via telephone line. And then as the intro goes along, it widens out into stereo and becomes dynamic, full range of pitch and everything, and not narrowed down like it starts out, which is pretty cool.
I'm fascinated by a bunch of the guys, like sound designers, like with Venus Theory or whomever, mm-hmm. where they do all these creative things and just come up with these awesome sounds in ways that I would never think of because I don't do that on the daily, sure. right? But it is really, really cool. All right, landing on tip number 5, this is something that you have just had to do because you mentioned a bit crushing plugin last week, but I'm talking about bit crushing and distortion here.
Yes. I was working on a remix. There is a very, very nice and handy and capable bit crusher built right into Logic. And the original version of this was done in Logic, but now the remix is being done in an entirely different DAW, and I had to find a different bit crusher because I didn't have a bit crusher available in Luna until...
Don't you hate when that happens, when you don't have a bit crusher?
Exactly. There's a bit crusher that can be found. It is by Triktik. They have a free version of a bit crusher, and then they have a pro version of that same bit crusher, and it can do some amazing bit crushing. As you mentioned, you get into doing an effect, and you think, oh, this is so cool, I'm going to turn it up. I got done with dealing with the bit crushing that I did in this remix, and it gets to the very end of where it's really just getting very, very extreme because it's for the outro of a song. And I thought, oh, my.
This was on the whole mix, or was it just on the guitar?
No, it was on a percussion loop.
Ah, got
that gets more and more crushed and distorted as it goes through the outro. By the time it got to the end, it was so ridiculously loud. I'm like, it sounds so cool, but it's so out of whack with the rest of the mix. I got to bring it down. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to overdo those sometimes because they can sound so cool, but then in context, it's not going to work. Like, maybe dial that back a little bit. But I'm a big fan of bit crushing as well. You often say that I'm the distortion guy.
You are the distortion guy.
I don't use it as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm a big fan. And it's not necessarily, although it's a part of it, but not just throwing distortion on a vocal or a drum loop or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that in itself can be very effective. Bit crushing obviously has that degrading quality on the audio that can be very, very cool, I think, because it is something that it sounds unexpected to me when you hear that sound. Uh-huh. It's not something that we're sort of used to hearing. And I guess that kind of goes along with the whole list here, right? Trying to make something a little bit more surprising or different sounding. A tip that I would just suggest if you're trying out bit crushing ears, if you go to the extremes with it, the top end can get really, really awful sounding. And it's not cool anymore. So having like a high cut filter on top of it can tame that when it's just like, oh, the aliasing is just going like, ah, I can't hear this anymore, right? But using a high cut filter on that can give some really, really cool results.
Do you have any favorite tools you like to use for doing all of these types of things?
Yeah, obviously Space Designer that I mentioned. I do like Logic's Bit Crusher as well. Now, two that I don't hear so much talking about, it's one plugin called Movement, which guess what it does? It adds movement, right? And Portal by Output again. And Portal is more of a granular thing. It can get ridiculously in-depth. You can automate just about every parameter. And those are two that are kind of cool for quick and dirty, unless you want to get really nerdy in there and just kind of throw on some presets. And I like those as well. I have to mention like Isotope's Vocal Synth as well. Because that's a cool one. You can go as mangly as you want.
It's pretty cool. And it's currently in version 2 as of the recording of this, so Vocal Synth 2.
What about you, though? What do you like to use?
Some of the ones that I like to do that are kind of fun just for various pitch things would be MicroPitch from Eventide. For distortion that is variable in terms of straight-up distortion, Crush Station, also by Eventide, is pretty cool. If I'm going to go with something that needs a little bit more randomness in terms of warbling a sound, the Korg SDD-3000 is pretty damn awesome at that. For reverb-like effects that you can do some crazy type of filtering things with, Enverb in Logic. Somebody else out there needs to create a version of Enverb that is not Logic so that it can be used elsewhere other than Logic. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, it is very handy the way it is in Logic, but we were talking about this, not on the podcast, the simplicity of it. You can recreate it, but you need to do all sorts of plugins and automation and stuff as opposed to having it just in the window.
Yeah, and so, Enverb is just a very cool effect in terms of adding spatial weirdness to things.
Really, really cool plugin. Obviously, all these techniques that we're talking about, there's no one way of doing it. A lot of times, just mixing up the order, trying different things, processing things further is the way to go. And sometimes you come up with something cool, and sometimes it's just a train wreck. But then nobody has to hear it, so that's good. Last question here before we start to put a bow on this, I would say. When you're doing this kind of processing, do you tend to leave the plugins active on the track, or do you tend to bounce it to audio?
Depends. If it's something like Enverb and I need to use it outside of Logic, I'm going to have to bounce it to track.
Right.
If it's not and it's something that I can do within the mix, I'd rather keep it in the mix.
Because to me, I think sometimes there's a randomness that can happen when we're doing this experimentation. If it has a pleasing result, let's say it's a filtering thing or what have you, or a nice gating thing, I like to bounce that to audio because then I have that preserved in time. I kind of think, so, okay, here's the audio and then add further processing or whatever.
Let's move on to our Friday Finds. Chris, what have you got this week?
A little while ago, a friend of the show, Adam Mosley, did a tutorial for Plugin Alliance. It's called How to Mix a Song. Isn't that apropos?
Wow.
It's essentially Adam just walking you through an artist that he's producing and walking through his thought process, his mentality, what he's looking for as he mixes this track. If you listen to Adam on our show or know about Adam, you know his wealth of knowledge. It's deep, right? So get to watch him to do that is a privilege, and it's really, really cool. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's called How to Mix a Song by Adam Mosley and Plugin Alliance. What about you?
I'm going with MicroPitch, and I know that I just said that it's one of my favorite tools, but I'm going to add a little extra to that, MicroPitch Immersive. As I'm about to be doing Sony 360 RA mixes of all of these remixes, plus Dolby Atmos versions of all these remixes, MicroPitch by Eventide now comes in a flavor called MicroPitch Immersive, which allows it to go 3D.
Very cool.
Which is such a mind-boggling experience when you can throw pitches around in the 3D space. That's my choice of this week for my Friday.
Awesome. Friday.
While we've got your attention, we ask that you go to InsideTheRecordingStudio.com and sign up for our mailing list. You'll need to be on our email list to be eligible for future giveaways, and we'll make sure you don't miss any future episodes of this incredible podcast. Send us an email at goldstar, G-O-L-D-S-T-A-R, at InsideTheRecordingStudio.com with the word tweaker, and you'll get something cool back in your inbox. If you have a topic or suggestion for Chris and I to explain in a future episode, contact us at the contact page and we'll put it into consideration for a future episode. With that, I'll say see you next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have an awesome day.